You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey folks, thanks for joining us. I just wanted to let you know there is a content warning in this episode for a whole bunch of things. Some things that are very horror movie things, but including child death, including sexual assault, including a lot of sort of horror tropes and religious iconography. So just heads up, content warning for that stuff. Thanks so much.
Welcome to You Love to See It, the podcast where we watch TV shows and movies and tell you all about them. I'm your host, LB Hunk-Tears, and I am joined, as usual, by my friends and cohorts, Merritt Kay and Danielle Riendo. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I feel like a moth flying closer and closer to the flame.
Yeah? Are you sure you're the moth and not the flame?
Wow.
How are you doing, Danielle?
I'm actually doing great. I'm very sad because Merritt and I tried to watch this movie together last night sad. Genuinely sad.
Talk about this.
Yeah.
Because this is important. This is one of the important issues of our time.
It is.
Danielle and I started a movie night like years ago, like two or three years ago, which is what got me into film. Into Aww. Cinema.
Yeah.
That's so cute. That's beautiful.
Yeah. I was never really, I don't know if I've told this backstory before, but like, I don't know, like, you know, I watched movies and stuff, but I wasn't like into movies. And we started watching a bunch. Also, I was really scared of horror movies. I was a real baby. Yeah. And they're like my favorite genre of movies now because I'm a sicko. so you can thank Danielle for that.
Aww.
But when COVID started, we started watching movies online, and Discord has a thing where you can screen share. So I would like rent the movie on YouTube, pay the $4 or whatever. And, you know, I would screen share it, and I have Discord Nitro. So it's like all like high quality and stuff. Technically illegal, maybe, but, you know, it's fine. But we finally found a movie that didn't work with that. And it was the Omen 3, The Final Conflict. Sorry, just Omen 3, The Final Conflict, not The Omen 3. It did that thing where it just has like, you know, when you try to take a screen cap sometimes of YouTube, it'll be like black screen or like white screen. It was blanked out. And we've been watching movies like this for a year. I didn't try a different browser, but we tried a different site as well, and it was also blanked out.
Omen 3, they don't, like...
Neill is just like, they can't know. They can't see this film. If they want to see it, they'll have to pay $4 American dollars.
And that will fuel the Thorn Corp through the next humanitarian aid.
Directly into Thorn's pockets.
So, as you may be guessing from this conversation, wouldn't it be wild if we started this and then, and like had this whole conversation about Omen 3 and then we watched a different movie? No, we watched, we're wrapping up.
The end of our Neill retrospective?
This is the end of our Sam Neill retrospective.
I mean, it's not. We're going to do more in the future, but for now, I think we're doing something different next week.
Yeah, end of You Love to Sam It, part one. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Wait, how many did we do? Because last week we did...
We did three. We did three.
Yeah. Yes. Neill Automata, Paul says in the chat. Neill Automata. I would have played... Okay, if Sam Neill was the main character of that game, I would have played it. I'm just saying. Yep. So
I did play it. I love that game. And if Sam Neill had been in it, like, just add another route. Just add another story. Well, like, yeah, I've done all the endings. I gave up my save. I'll play the whole thing again if I can get a final route with Sam Neill.
The final Sam. Yeah.
The final Sam.
The final Sam. Okay, well. Just like the final Pam.
The final Omen Sam 3. Into the sunset.
How do I say Omen? I can't just say Omen 3.
You have to.
Say
the
you Omen just did. 3.
It's not the it's Omen hard. 3, though.
It's just Omen 3. 3.
It's just Omen 3.
You will witness the ultimate challenge to the future of mankind. Damien Thorne is 32. Attractive. Brilliant. Charismatic. To the modern world, he brings a purpose, a vision, a destiny. He's one step away from the most important position on Earth.
Disciples of the Watch, I stand before you in the name of the one who is cast out from heaven, but is alive. And me.
Heed the warning. Prepare for the final conflict, the concluding chapter of the Omen trilogy.
Omen 3, The Final Conflict. Also released as simply The Final Conflict, probably because people like to say the before a thing.
Yeah, that's
right. We love articles in language. It's true.
We love it.
At least in English.
We love to
die. At least in the Infertile Crescent, as you said earlier.
Well, it's 1981 American British supernatural horror film directed by Graham Baker. It's the third installment in the Omen series. It stars Sam Neill, Lisa Harrow, and Rossano Brazzi.
Yeah.
The film tells the progression of the now adult Damien Thorne to a position of earthly power, setting us the countdown to the second coming and attempts of a group of priests to kill the Antichrist. Richard Donner, director of the first Omen film, returns as executive producer. The film was released in theaters on March 20th, 1981. So you all did a different, my favorite Sam Neill movie from 1981, Antichrist, or not Antichrist, what am I saying? Possession.
Possession.
It's because I did that tweet about Willem Dafoe's dick a few days ago, and I just like haven't been able to stop thinking about it. Yeah. Possession, 1981. You did a You Love to Scream It About. Same year as this. Very fun to think about Sam Neill doing both these movies in
Wait,
the same year.
That was the same year?
Yeah. Yes.
Wait, LB, also, were you not on that?
No.
Who was on that?
Was I on that? You two and Colin?
I was on it.
Was John on it?
I was on it. Colin was on it. Someone else. It might have been you, Merritt. It might have been you.
I was on it, I think. I mean, I have seen that movie.
But we all saw different versions of it, which is also, and canonically, I have decided, because I'm the editor-in-chief, that we can do a movie again if we decide we need to. So
great.
It's always in the...
I mean, if we run out of movies, you know?
If we get to the end of every all movie. Movies...
Then we can repeat movies.
It's fine. Possession again.
We'll just do Possession Great. Again because there's no other good movie.
LB, when is your birthday?
July, but I have a different plan for July.
Okay. I was going to say, like,
I'm going to make you watch Lair of the White Worm.
You need to do a Sam Neill for your birthday. Oh God, that yes. could be a saying because I did it.
No,
for
we're going to do Lair of the White Worm.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's going to be great. No, it's, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe do a couple of Ken Russells, actually. Okay. Now I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
but. I mean, the fact that I, like, that you were like, let's do Jurassic Park 3, and I was like, what about the Omen 3 instead? Mm-hmm. And got you to watch this stupid fucking movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so delighted by that.
Yes.
Like, okay. So, let's get into this movie. Yeah, this was, what's your, like, experience levels with the Omen franchise and with this particular one and with the Christian End Times?
Oh, my God. Mary, do you want to go first? Go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah. I have never seen any of the Omen films. So this was my first one. So when it opens up and it's just Sam Neill is Damien Thorne, who is, of course, the Antichrist. And he's just telling his, like, advisor, like, oh, yeah, the president's going to call me and make me the ambassador to Great Britain. Because, as it says in the book, of
Hebron.
The Book of Hebron. Are you familiar with the Book of Hebron? I think they really reached their peak with the Book of Hebron because a lot of people don't even read the lyrics, but they should. But I was like, wait, does this guy know that he's the Antichrist?
Or is
Damien just like doing this whole monologue and then he's going to be like, that's right, I'm the Antichrist. and now I'm going to kill you. No, he knows, and he's still his best friend and his helper and his like little guy. Because I was like, it was very funny for to me, just being like, I came into this movie with no prior history. So to me, this is a film about a man who is just a guy who is trying to kill a lot of kids and yet somehow is still kind of the protagonist.
It's such a weird movie because the protagonist is in fact the Antichrist.
It's structured around him and like there are other characters, but like all the priests who are trying to kill him are just like nothing. Most of them just die. They don't even have names.
They're
really.
Just like I mean, a costume names, decision. Like it's like
and an accent.
Yeah. And then Lisa Harrow, priest. Yeah.
Lisa Harrow as Kate is like, I guess the protagonist, but like not.
No, the really? Protagonist of this movie is the Antichrist.
The Antichrist himself. Is yes, the protagonist is of this movie, which is very strange. But yeah, so that I'm aware that like the Omen series is about a kid who is the Antichrist, and they reference earlier films, I think.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I was coming in totally fresh.
Yeah.
So you'd like, but like the, you know, Damien, it's all for you, like all that stuff. Like that's not a.
No, I don't know what that is.
These aren't references. Okay.
I came in with absolutely no knowledge of The Omen. I've never seen any of those movies, but I know a lot about Christian end times shit because you all know my tragic backstory as a Catholic school child who had to take religion class for 14 years. So I know a lot of the like stuff in the last book of the Bible. I've read most of it I'm not saying at this point, by the time I was, 17, but this was a wild depiction of that stuff, for sure. So, yeah.
Cool. I had seen the first Omen. I haven't seen the second one. And again, like, I think by the time I saw the first Omen, I was like, all the like classic Omen. It's like, it's such a fixture in pop culture mm-hmm. in so many ways.
Yeah, like Creepy Kid, just, like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Creepy Kid, like, you know, weird devoted followers, where I, like, had seen it referenced that, yeah, I was like, okay, I've basically seen this movie somehow, just referenced through other things. Mm-hmm. And then The Omen 3, when did I think our mutual friend Winter recommended it to me.
Okay.
Based on the various monologues Sam Neill delivers to his life-size statue of Jesus that he keeps in a special room in his house.
Yeah, for someone who hates Jesus Christ, he certainly has a much bigger statue of it in his home than many people I know who
I don't think
have warmer
him.
Feelings towards him, I would say.
I mean, it's not like, you know... the like Hark a Vagrant nemesis shit mm-hmm. of like I keep a special painting of my special nemesis and I kiss it every night before bed and I do deliver a monologue to it. It's so absurd.
I think he does
and, like,
more than kiss it before bed.
Yeah, he does. But, he's like, I mean, why it's yeah the blocking of the I mean we can get into that. As I've discussed pretty openly, I am not a Christian. I was not raised in that faith. That is not my cultural background. However, I know way more than most Jews mm-hmm. do about the Christian end times because I love Christian camp. It's one of my favorite genres.
Oh, I thought you meant like going to like a Christian camp.
No, I hated going to Christian camp. I went
Did you
to,
go to
a Girl
Christian
Scout
camp
once. I went to a Girl Scout camp once in Orange County, California.
Oh my
God. Where me and Hannah Rosenthal just kind of sat uncomfortably while everyone prayed for like 2 hours.
Wow.
It sucked.
That sounds like, that sounds bad.
So I am from LA, but I did live in Orange County for like the first 9 years or so of my life. And my school shared space with an evangelical school that had a giant, like a much bigger statue, like a larger than life statue of Jesus Christ carrying the cross. But he was fucking yoked.
Yep.
He was just a jacked Jesus. So
I love a ripped Christ, you know?
Yeah.
Most of them are, and it's a lot.
I want
it's
that that Christ on the cross look, you know? Like, really, like, cut. You know? Like, lean, you know?
Catholic, I feel like Catholic depictions are much more, like, willowy. And like Protestant, especially evangelical Protestant depictions are like, he's just fucking like, Jesus is on the fucking juice. Jesus is on the gas. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
So yeah, I like I've seen a few. What's that? Thief in the Night is my favorite End Times movie series. I like I know like I have favorite versions of like different 70s evangelical songs about the end times.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, Larry Norman, I Wish We'd All Been Ready is a great song, objectively. Larry Norman is, like, a really good Christian singer. So, yeah, I have, like, this is my secret weird enthusiasm.
I
watched
it.
A lot of TBN as a kid. Yeah.
What's a lot of what?
Trinity Broadcasting Network.
What is that?
Oh, it's a evangelical channel. It's like televangelists, like Tammy Faye Baker and stuff. She was on there. The Crystal Cathedral, all that stuff, I think, was on Trinity Broadcasting Network.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I ask?
Tammy Faye Baker, wait, yes. She's that she became like a weird, like, kind of advocate for gay people. Is that a thing?
Did she? Or did gay people just love her because she wore a lot of makeup?
Oh, that's possible. Yeah.
It might be that. I just have to ask LB. So this stuff, like, I have a very strong aversion to all of these things, but it's because of, you know, reasons. But I am genuinely fascinated by people who are smart, cool people with good politics who are interested in this stuff. And I just, could you like, just give me, like...
I
mean,
I can tell you, it's a bummer. It's the origin story is kind of a bummer. But I will tell it to you if you want.
All right. I am just so curious. I'm sorry. I'm so curious.
I was uninvited from a birthday party in third grade because of blood libel, which is the medieval myth that Jews eat the blood of Christian babies. And the girl who did this, Jessica.
Jessica.
She was Jessica.
Jessica, I hope you figured your shit out. Because Jessica also, like, Jessica was gay.
Yeah.
Jessica was really gay.
That tracks.
Yeah. But she was evangelical. She watched a lot of evangelical TV. That's how I like first saw it. And I guess I just like got really into watching it as like a not like a coping mechanism, but like as a, I don't understand why this happened.
Yeah.
This is like really hurtful.
Yeah.
And like, oh, okay, this is because this person's really stupid. And believes this dumb thing and watches these dumb shows that I'm going to watch and laugh at. And,
oh my God.
But then I watch it. I'm like, there's something really kind of, there's like a really interesting camp aesthetic about this that I got into.
Thank you so much for sharing.
My origin story.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you.
And also like, that's why I have a lot of weird aversions to like certain Christian stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I also like seek it out. Like a wild maniac sometimes.
Totally.
Which is why I see all these like weird 70s movies. I'm sure, and I'd be on YouTube and I'd be watching these and laughing and I'd read the comments and people be like, I was forced to watch this as a 10-year-old and it terrified me.
Yeah.
And I'm like yucking it up. I'm like, oh no, this is genuinely traumatic for many, many people.
Yeah.
Which like I do want to, it's, you know, it's a mess. Religion's a mess. Especially like, you know, 20th century American religion shit is a mess.
Yeah.
But I think there's like something where that mess coincides with pop culture and where that mess, where it intersects with pop culture, where it intersects with genre, where it intersects with horror, particularly, like, I find so interesting.
Mm.
And The Omen 3 is such like a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
So like, spoiler alert, the end of this movie, Jesus just shows up.
Yep.
And it turns for the whole thing, it's just Samuel being sexy, Samuel being sexy, Samuel killing kids. And then Jesus shows up and there's a bunch of Bible quotes on the screen and that's the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. This?
Which is
I have
so
to talk
weird.
About this moment. Like, I know
we're, okay.
It's okay. You know what? This one, like, it barely matters if you do go in order with this movie, so it's kind of like...
The structure is bizarre, so yeah.
Yeah, the structure and pacing are really all over the place for this movie, but I think it's, like, a singular vehicle for this performance, and therefore it is, like, just incredible and should be watched by anyone who is, I guess, not, like, a deeply conservative Christian. I don't know. Whatever. But yeah, the ending had extreme, extreme Christian bookstore energy to me. After, like, seeing a very sensual scene with a Jesus statue that involved blood and massage and, like, whispering in an ear and so on and so forth, which is a scene in this movie, I was like, what? You're ending with Christian bookstore? I thought you liked Damien movie. I thought you thought Damien was very sexy and good. Movie. So I was very confused at the end, even though I really enjoyed the ride. It was like we were on a great roller coaster, an amazing roller coaster, and it just sort of ends in a weird place, as if the, you know, as if the gift shop that you're getting off into after the roller coaster was a Christian bookstore.
That really is like that. It's like you went through the Hell House, but the Hell House was just sexy and awesome. And yeah, okay, there was some child murder. And I'm not going to say child murder is cool. And I'm not going to say, you know, like he does a lot of bad stuff, but he's so charming.
It's like, are you supposed to like him? Because he's very, very charismatic.
And also, no one else is charismatic.
Nobody else exists in this movie. Like, there's a priest cult of like, assassin priests, and all of them are very bad at their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it's a me. I'm gonna kill the Antichrist.
Right. Everyone I'm talks like that. Taxes. I'm not gonna kill the Antichrist.
I'm watching the like the priest scenes. They're all praying out loud, and they all have slightly different, all super fake accents.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like, one guy sounds like Bela Lugosi, and another guy sounds like Mario, and it's just like, this is absurd. And they all have these daggers that, so the opening scene is like a guy in Chicago going through rubble, and like there's just a random Jesus dagger in the rubble. And I guess, okay, so this was all, I think this is tying into The Omen 2, which I haven't seen.
Okay.
Because they do refer back to the daggers that, like, Damien collected all the daggers and then put them in the Thorn Museum, and then the Thorn Museum was destroyed. So the structure of this movie is a lot of, like, we're just kind of following Sam Neill around as he ascends to power. And so, yeah, he really has this, like, record scratch exposition moment that Merritt Merritt talked about very openly earlier, where, like, he's telling his little guy, what's his little guy's name? His little guy
Arnold. No, it's
Barnold.
Harvey.
Barnold is a really good name for a little guy.
Yeah.
His name's Harvey. It's Don Gordon.
Okay.
Is the actor.
So he's got this like little assistant guy who he's just kind of saying like, yeah, I'm the Antichrist. And if you'd read the Book of Hebron, you'd know that the Antichrist needs to rule over the Angel Isle, which is England.
Apparently.
So basically, it's, I don't know, which is also in Sonic, apparently, you're telling me?
Right.
I was trying to find if there's anything else that references England as Angel Island, and I can't find anything.
Okay.
But it's possible that Sonic 3 Angel Island is a reference to England, maybe?
I like to think that this is definitely like an extended Sonic universe movie.
Yeah.
Like, I do like that. I think that's very good for this movie.
Yeah, I'm into that. Okay, so Sonic and the Omen share a universe. Mm-hmm.
It explains a few things, you know?
Yeah.
It does.
So yeah, we have these like exposition segments where he's just kind of telling you about stuff, or a priest is telling you about stuff.
Or a movie that he's going to use as an ad is telling you about stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So he like literally has a scene at the very beginning, which is both establishing a lot of things about a character and also like an in-universe metatextual like examinationing of too much exposition. Like he's like, oh, it's too much third grade, you know, lesson about blah, blah, blah. Which I have to say, one of the things I like the most about this movie, other than just Sam Neill's performance, is the fact that the Antichrist is like a nonprofit leader. like that he's like, oh, he's seen as being like a very, oh, he's so kind. He gives so much. His aid workers are there. Like, as somebody who started her career in the nonprofit world, I once had an executive director who told me, like, Danielle, what we do is alternative therapy for rich people. It's to let them feel less guilty about the world that they're in. So I really appreciated that, like, this is a piece of this movie, like, you know, the sort of corporate beneficence bullshit is, like, seen for what it is a little bit, even though it blinds most people in the movie.
Well, I mean, there's also stuff where he's, like, negotiating with the United States president about getting the, about, you know, because he wants to get this ambassadorship. Because, I mean, the first, there's a lot of grisly deaths in this movie. And the first grisly death is the satanically organized suicide of the sitting ambassador to the UK, which is done via, like, a weird, like, Rube Goldberg machine.
Shotgun. Hooked up to the door.
Yeah, like the guy, instead of just shooting himself, just like rigs up a whole like pull like a Home Alone thing.
Yeah, okay, let's not mince words. It is a Home Alone thing for killing yourself. And like yeah, he like opens up like a typewriter and unspools like the thing, the ribbon, and uses it to like tie the trigger to the door and then calls a press conference so that when everyone comes in, the gun goes off and shoots him in the head. I don't know why that was necessary. Like why, if Damien can make people do stuff like that, couldn't he just make him shoot him in the head? Like,
right. But he likes, he has a flair for the dramatic.
I suppose
he does.
Yeah. He makes everybody do wild shit. It's not just like, oh, somebody just died. It's like, no, the weirdest shit has to happen.
I mean, this is a guy who does keep a room in his house that is empty, aside from a life-size statue of Jesus on the cross, but facing backwards, so he can kind of sneak up behind it and whisper into his ear and like rub up against it or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, a dramatic dude. But I mean, there's that. So yeah, so he's like, there's a thing where I guess where was I going with that? Oh, that like the president's super corrupt. Oh, and they're just, like, very open about, like, yeah, everyone's a dickhead and who's in power. Which is, I don't know, like, the politics of this movie are bizarre and completely incomprehensible. Just kind of, like, the same way the, like, the religion stuff in this movie is bizarre and completely incomprehensible. I have no idea what point of view this movie has about anything.
Right. Yeah. It is confused. It is a confusing melange. It is a confusing mix, a blend, if you will, of many, many, many elements. And some of them are really, really fun and awesome and charismatic and sexy. And some of them are Christian bookstore. And some of them are like truly grisly effects. Like you said, there are some really interesting and really good, actually, like horror effects in this movie that I think are actually very, very, very well, effective. I always feel weird saying special effects are effective because it makes me sound like like a doofus, but it's true. They do what they should do well. So, yeah.
So, yeah, so we got Damien. He becomes the ambassador. His main condition, though, is he wants to be the leader of the youth council, like the UN. Youth. The UN has a youth group. Uh-huh. And he wants to be the boss of it.
Yep.
Is that real?
Maybe.
It might be. It might be. There are some vibe. I feel like this movie is very well divided, like, into thirds. There's, like, the DC third, and then two-thirds of it takes place in England. And in the DC third, it has some Exorcist vibes a little bit. Mm-hmm. We've kind of got that going on. I also just recently watched, with Merritt, Exorcist 3, which is a fantastic movie. There's, like, little bits and pieces of that. And then we go to England, and it's, like, so England. We, like, make fun of English broadcasting. We have English weather. Like, the whole thing is, like, a joke about England. It's weird. It's very odd. And then we also have a hunting scene. So it's, like, every the little bit of England. Scene. Yeah.
That's a wild fucking scene.
Yeah, it is.
But, okay, sorry. I do want to, like, try and... So usually in the LB-hosted episodes, we just kind of skip all over the place because I don't, like... I don't understand structure, but I'm going to try. I'm going to try and follow the structure of this movie. So we get to the UK. We're at this, like, gala that he's thrown, where it sounds like it's so we it opens on these like middle-aged British guys drinking wine and like eating food, and they're like they're eating soy food because Thorn Industries makes soy food.
Yeah. Right, yeah, which is like such a funny like characteristic of the Antichrist to have. It's like, oh, we make soy products for everyone. Everyone can eat soy. Everyone can. He's like obviously, I don't think soy had the connotation that I did when this film came out that it does now, yeah, of being like a cooked food. But it is. I feel like it did have the energy of just being like, oh yeah, he's like a vegetarian. It's like alternative to like, you know, it's. He's so kind and gentle and good and perfect. And like, yeah, that's what he wants you to think. He's fucked up.
It's all because of his whole humanitarian thing, too, that he, like, feeds the hungry. He does all the things that, you know, Jesus purports to do. Like,
well, that's the Antichrist deal.
Yeah, that's kind
of... Is he supposed to be completely in... Oh, so, actually, like, this is something that always bugged me about this mythology. Not the Omni mythology, the end times mythology.
The Bible.
So, well, I don't think it's actually in the Bible. I think it's in, like, I don't know, analysis or something. I don't really know how it works in Christianity. So the idea that, like, the Antichrist is supposed to have, like, an identical birth. So he's supposed to have a virgin birth and, like, seem exactly like the second coming in every way. It's like, how are you supposed to fucking tell the difference?
Right? Then? Like, is it just the way he looks? Is it just the way he feels about his Jesus statue? Is that the
only
thing?
If anyone asks you to get a mark, like, you should totally get my tattoo or... You should totally get this vaccine. then they're probably the Antichrist.
Right, but Damian Thorne doesn't want that.
Well, he does smear blood on a kid's face.
But that's normal.
That is normal. Yeah, that's normal. Hey, can we talk about all this stuff? So, like...
Yes.
Okay, so he becomes the guy... He's like, I want to be the guy. And the president's like, well, all right. You know, I don't know. I'm just an old country boy, but I suppose. Because basically his whole thing is he's like, well, I can prove that it wasn't Israel that blew up this dam that killed tens of thousands of people, even though it like definitely super, super was. It was Marxists who did it, probably, maybe. And that's how he leverages his way into this position. And then he goes to London and these priests are like, okay, we got to kill the Antichrist. The only thing that can kill him is stabbing him to death with this special, particular knife. Yeah. And also Christ is being reborn when the Cassiopeia constellation aligns to create the second star of Bethlehem. And so we got to kill him. And then Damien's like, oh, shit, Christ is coming back. And every day Christ is alive, my powers weaken. So we have to murder all of the kids who were born on this day. Hey, advisor, when was your son born again? And he's like, not that day. Definitely not that day. And he's like, okay, I believe you. Obviously he was lying. And so I thought, okay, I was confused here for a minute, yeah, because mm-hmm. I thought Harvey's kid did die in an accident. Like, because there's that scene where Harvey's wife is like pushing the carriage and then it gets hit by a car and her groceries fly everywhere. But I guess the baby wasn't in the carriage, like she was holding it or something.
Oh, yeah. I think the groceries were in the carriage.
Yeah, it was
the
just baby groceries. Was in the arms.
I guess. Yeah. Because then later on they're watching TV and like she sees this report that like, hey, a whole bunch of babies have died. That's weird. And there's a guy from the government like, it's not weird, don't worry about it.
yep.
It's fine. And I thought that because Harvey's like, oh, it's just a coincidence. And I thought that he was saying that like because their son had died too, but like, no, his son is still alive. And until Damien uses his powers to make Harvey's wife think that her baby is a mummy.
That was
a creepy mummy.
It's a cool effect.
It's my favorite effect in the whole movie.
Because you think, oh, what's going to happen is Damien's dog is going to come burst through the window and kill the baby. Right. No, the dog just uses its powers. Because that dog, I don't think, actually kills anyone. I think that dog mostly just, like, uses its powers to, like, influence people.
He just possesses people or whatever it is. Yeah.
And, yeah.
He's got Satan powers.
Like, if you thought your kid was a mummy, you would probably try to kill it with an iron, too. Maybe. Well, yeah. Unclear.
I'll never know.
We'll never know.
Yeah. Mm. There's like a bunch of things in this about possession that are not quite clear. Like, it's not quite clear if all the people that are his followers, of which a lot are children, if they truly believe in stuff or they're possessed. Like, they are like, oh, they're being possessed by the Antichrist who's making them do things. Or are they like, yeah, totally, I want to go to hell. That sounds good.
Well, part of his argument, which again, like, as established, I do find quite compelling, is that Christianity is really lame.
Yeah, that is funny.
Yeah. Like, if he wins, everything will be awesome.
Yeah,
but like, if Jesus wins, everything will suck.
It's kind of like unclear, like, he's got a bit of a Hellraiser thing going on of like, yeah. Of like, oh, I will teach you the exquisite raptures of agony or something. It's like very confusing, like what his deal is, because he's like, basically like, Jesus is boring and dumb and I hate him. Good is stupid.
And he can't get hard.
Evil will always triumph over good. God, God is dumb.
God is impotent.
God is impotent.
Satan's got a big dick.
Yeah. Yeah, because Jesus wasn't born from doing it, you know?
That's true.
Good point.
That's why he says that, I think.
Yeah, but he brings it up a lot.
He does.
It comes up a lot. And his, like, okay, so I do want to point out, like, a big part of the plot is, I guess the only, like, good guy we have in this movie is Kate Reynolds, a BBC journalist who meets Damien at the gala and wants to interview him. She's actually a single mom of a, like, a preteen boy. I guess he's, like, supposed to be, like, 11 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Who's, like, a big Damien Thorne fan, and Damien kind of takes him on as his adoptive son minion person.
once he's flooded, he's in.
Yeah. After wiping the blood of some dead priests on this kid's face. and starts dating his mom. That's the vibe he's got. So one of the priests, number one Mario priest, goes to Kate and's like, your son's bestie, aka your maybe boyfriend, is the literal Antichrist. Please be careful. She goes to his house and they bone. In a kind of a very weird sex scene that gets like,
yeah,
kind of violent.
Yeah, they bone and then there's like a sexual assault.
Yeah.
Here's what the Wikipedia summary says. The next night during sex, Damien sodomizes Reynolds.
I think that's very confusing wording.
It is implied to me that
I understand that. So is it like, okay. After that, after he, I guess in like 1981, that's never something you like. Like, I guess they took the anal out of Hellraiser. Like, so we can't understand.
Yeah, no, it's funny in Hellraiser. It is funny that, what's his name? He's like, I've explored all of the pleasures this world has to offer. But he never tried butt stuff.
Right.
He just skipped straight from PIV to, like, the puzzle box, which is wild, you know?
There's nothing in between. Yeah.
Like, just subtle, like, ramp up, you know?
Yeah, buddy.
But yeah, he's just like, do you want to know what I know, what I see? Pain, blah, blah, blah. And then there's kind of an upsetting.
Okay.
This part is pretty upsetting.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I just want to point out that afterwards, like, she wakes up and he's not there because he has gotten up after this to go sleep in his weird Jesus room.
Yep,
naked on the floor with his nemesis instead of his girlfriend, which is fucking weird.
Yep.
The vibes in this movie, the like sexual vibes in this movie are not as inscrutable as the political and religious vibes, but because like you have a little bit more insight into them, that makes them even more like baffling and weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were they going? Were they going for that? They had to have. They had to have. Like, there's the number of shots of the amount of time that Sam Neill spends up, like, behind naked Jesus, whispering into his ear, stroking him, is just like, what else could they be meaning here?
It's right. A lot. Yeah. Like, that stuff is good. I mean, those are the best parts of the movie, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When he's just monologuing with the statue of Christ and just going like, and just kind of like draping himself over this statue.
And there's a blood tear.
Yeah, then Christ's blood. That's like the best parts of the movie to me.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The stuff about just like the guys running around trying to stab him. It's like, yeah. And then honestly, there's like a lot of stuff in this movie that I feel like doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Like, just doesn't come together. Like, at the beginning, the stuff about Israel, and then I thought they were building towards, like, oh, this is obviously some kind of, like, end times, you know, Middle Eastern apocalyptic conflict thing. No, they don't really talk about that anymore after that.
As we all know, the end times stuff all plays out in England.
right. And it's mostly just some guys trying to stab Damien.
Yeah, it's mostly the worst assassins.
Very incompetent priests.
It's just some very incompetent priests trying to stab a guy. And like,
they all die in like comic book video games.
They all die comically. Like, one of them tries to stab him when he's on the talk show, and he ends up like burning himself alive in plastic while swinging back and forth across the camera. And then there's the part where he's fox hunting. Also, I know fox hunting is like a very, it's like, I don't think you should do fox hunting. I'm just gonna say it. You know what? It's 2021. I'm gonna come up with a bold anti-fox hunting stance. But those costumes look cool as fuck.
Yeah.
If I could dress like a fox hunter all the time, just be like, oh, it's a beautiful day for it. And just like not mean fox hunting.
Great,
like, not
news
mean
for
anything.
You, Merritt.
Yeah.
There are many enthusiasts of the look of fox hunting that have figured out a way to do the fox hunt with all humans.
Oh no!
And they run around the woods in various outfits.
Is this a sex thing?
Yes, it's a sex thing.
Oh. It has to be. Okay. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Well.
Hey, it's one of the few places where pony play people, puppy play people, and fox people, and people who like to dress up like their hunters,
the shaking
can
hands
all
thing.
Scamper around in the woods together.
Well, I wish them the best. I don't think that's for me, but
that's fair.
I just want to dress like that. But that part, they do some like weird elaborate trick to try to like draw him away from the rest of the hunt, and
it's really embarrassing.
Then these two guys try to kill him. One of them he kills by scaring the guy's horse, because as we all know, the Antichrist can control animals and scare them. He scares the horse, and the horse backs up and throws the guy off the bridge, which that guy said, I think, was one of the most dangerous stunts he had ever done in his life.
Mm-hmm.
That is terrifying.
A 100-foot fall from a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Holy shit, they actually...
The most frightening stunt of his career, yep. He said, in the Guinness Book of World Records 2005.
Yeah. And Victor Armstrong is still with us. He is 74. And he was also a double for Harrison Ford in the first three Indiana Jones movies.
Oh,
sorry.
Wow.
Sorry, okay. In the Indiana Jones movies.
The only ones that exist. Yes. Okay.
And then the other guy is like, oh, fuck. Like, oh, fuck. Okay, no. I am going to stab him, though. I'm going to get him. And then he's just like... Damien is standing there with all these hounds, and he's just like, take him. And like, they just all like run after the guy, and the guy tries to like jump into his car, and they just fucking tear him apart. It's so brutal. And then he takes the priest's blood and like smears it on the kid.
Cause that, I guess flooding,
God.
That's like a thing.
It's like a thing,
that's
I guess.
A normal part
a
of hunting.
A normal hunting thing is called blooding, where they wipe the fox blood on your face or something when it's your first one. And Damien's like, the kid's like, oh, Damien, does it count? Does it count? And he's just like, it counts for me. And just like wipes blood on this kid's face. And it's like, wow, now he's the devil's child.
Okay. I do see this part though and go like, damn, I wish that were me.
I mean, yeah, of course you do. Because that's
like
normal.
All I really want is for 1981 Sam Neill to wipe some priest blood on my face.
Also, we haven't talked about this yet. His hair in this movie is deranged.
Oh,
like,
my
his
God.
Hair is like, just look up his haircut. If you haven't seen this movie, look up Sam Neill's hair in this because it's just so doofy and like, like he just looks like such a dweebus.
It's a 70s Ken doll haircut.
Yeah.
It looks like it's just plastic and part of his head.
Yep, precisely.
I don't understand because he's so hot. He's so attractive.
I think it's because he's like
hair.
They don't want him to be. He's not like a cool sexy guy. He's like a establishment sexy guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So he has to have dipshit hair.
So. He's you know, takes over his girlfriend's daughter or son. What movie is this? he like brings his girlfriend's son into his dark army, and he has a dark army because like you see him talking to them at one point where he's just like, if the Christ wins, then everything will
the
fucking
Nazarene.
Suck.
Everything will be boring.
And I am great. And they're like, you are great. We talked about how Harvey's wife kills his kid and then kills him. She realizes she's like, when she, after they've slept together, she finds him on the floor in the Christ room and like checks under his hair and is like, oh no, that old priest was right. He really is the Antichrist. He has the 666 birthmark. Oh no.
He literally has 666. The digits. I'm sorry. There's something so funny about like, it's not like, you know, the Hebrew letters or like even Roman numerals. It's just like, no. Or Greek. It's like, nope.
It's just three sixes like in a circle. It's really
stupid. Real easy. Impossible to miss. Really.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's under his hair. So like, you know.
But
is that why the haircut is so dorky? Because it has to cover that completely.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. That's going to suck when you go to the hairdresser. It's like, okay, so here's the deal.
Please do not.
I have this birthmark. It's like I have the Vin Diesel, like, bump on the back of my head.
Uh-huh. I don't know what that
but,
is.
Like, so, like, I have, like, a... So, like, if Vin I was Diesel to shave bump? My head...
Is that, like, when Vin Diesel comes on your show and...
I mean, Vin Diesel, please come give us the Vin Diesel bump. Vin Diesel, go on K-hole. Oh my God.
Vin Diesel, go on K-hole.
Oh my God, yes.
Listen, I'm quoted on Vin Diesel's Wikipedia page, so.
Oh, because of your thing.
Because of that
That's
thing that
so
I made.
Cool.
So we have a connection already.
When I shave the back of my head, I have like a little flap, like a little like skin chub thing. Then if you look at the back of Vin Diesel's head, he also has like a little thing there. So like if I get a haircut, I have to be like, hey, you know, I don't necessarily want to have this showing. So could you like kind of work around it? Like Damien, he is the same thing. He's like, hey, you know, I have this like weird birthmark. Don't ask me about it. Don't look too closely at it or anything. But I do want to make sure my hair does cover it.
Yeah. But she finds it anyway. And then he's like, oh damn, that old priest is right. So then they like lure him to this old church by saying like, oh, we'll tell you where the Nazarene is. We'll tell you where the reincarnation of Jesus is. Just give me back my son. Why does he buy it? They were like, come to this old shitty church, this old shit ass church. This is where the guy is. Totally. I definitely promise. But he's like, yeah, okay. I buy it. Goes with them. And then, the priest tries to stab him, but Damien's like, not so fast. And, just throws the kid in front of the knife so he gets stabbed. And then he's like wandering around like, face me, Nazarene. And it's like, dude, he is not here.
Like, what are you talking about? Obviously, he's not here.
So isn't he like a two-day-old baby?
Yeah.
It's yeah. really, well, I was so confused. At this point in the movie, it's confusing. I was just so confused. I was like, okay. At first, I thought it was supposed to be the baby of Harvey. That like, oh, it'd be some dramatic irony if it was Harvey's baby. That was the, you know, the Christ.
Oh, yeah. No, that's child. What I thought at first, too, right?
And then it's just a mummy, and then the Nazarene is still there, and it's like, he's supposed to be an infant, because, you know, Damien grew up from being an infant, so why wouldn't it be the same? Isn't everything supposed to mirror? So I was very confused, and any insight you all can give me at this point would be very helpful.
So I want to refer you to just a concept that somebody, really, really interesting scholar, posting this to the Discord chat, It's just a really interesting thought experiment that I think really applies to this, which was, I don't know if you're familiar with Merritt Kay.
Yes. She asked,
what if every time a guy nutted an adult person just came out? And I think that's where this Jesus came from.
Oh, wow. We would have so many people in this world.
But I mean, it's like, yeah, that this was literally that's the first thing I thought of, because it's like, how did this kid grow up so fast?
Right.
Which, like, okay, so actually, like, in I think the Quran, Jesus is still a baby. Jesus is a baby, but he can talk.
Okay.
I mean, look, Jesus is magic, okay? So, like, come on.
Yeah, but just growing up really fast, like, I think I mentioned this with the, in the context of your tweet, Merritt, but like, this did make me think of the end of the Anne Rice book, The Witching Hour, where the main character gives birth to her own incubus as a baby, and then he just very rapidly grows to adulthood before her eyes, in a horrific scene. But yeah, that is what I kind of imagine happened with this Jesus, of just being like, bloop, 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 okay, I'm here.
I mean, there's a Star Trek episode.
You rang, Damien?
Yeah. It's called The Child. It's how TNG started in the second season.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It is.
A weird energy.
Yeah. It was like supposed to be an original series episode, but they adapted it to the next generation. So it's not quite a one to one, but it's all right, you know.
Yeah.
All right. So Jesus is just there. And Kate ends up doing the stabby stab. Kate does the stab.
So wait, is Damien's like distracted by Jesus, right? And then so she can jump in and do the stab?
I think she stabs him first.
Or does she stab him first and then Jesus shows up like, hey, I'm your new boyfriend now. What's up?
Right? I guess. And then it's Christian bookstore.
Okay, seriously though? One of the scariest endings I've ever seen on a
horror movie.
Yeah,
seriously.
Like, okay, yeah. So she stabs him, then he's just, at first it's like, wait, did he actually get stabbed? Is he okay? Right. There's like some doubt because he's like,
he's able to kind of limp around
and then
little.
He just like kind of limps forward.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you haven't won, Nazarene, you've won nothing. And it's like, well, it does seem like maybe he did win. And then Christ appears. And then I would have actually ended the movie on that first text screen when it just says, like, what's the first thing it says? I don't know. Like, there's a couple of screens, though, like, because just like it zooms out and there's like this light coming out of the church and then the just text on the screen, like, he will live again or something. And then there's like another scene of like the priest carrying what's her name's daughter, Kate's daughter, or why do I keep saying Kate's daughter? I think it's the hair. Kate's son over. And then there's another bunch of text that says, like, and there will be no sorrow anymore or whatever. I don't think you need that. Just have, like, that one text thing. Two is like, okay, well, this is a little much.
Maybe, like, maybe test audiences saw and were like, this is, I still think Satan's too sexy. I need a second Bible quote, please.
It's also the quote that the priest in Titanic says. As, like, everyone's about to die, and
is
he's
it?
Like, it really what? Is. Yeah, it's the same quote. It's like, a famous priest quote. I was, like,
from
shitting. Not literally.
Priest.
But, like, I was very upset at the end of this movie. I was truly like, all right, I thought I was watching this fun movie with this wild shit, and now it's back to, like, being 14 and being so scared of my religion teacher, I almost cried in class, and I had to run away and cry in the bathroom for a little while because she was very scary.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. So sorry. We're being real honest today, I guess, about religion. But, yeah, like, this was so Christian bookstore, and it made me very, very uncomfortable at the end.
Sorry.
Damien, what happened, bud? Where are you?
I guess I've been training my whole life to not feel uncomfortable.
I think it's good that it's uncomfortable.
But yeah, no, it's very weird. It's very awkward. It comes very much out of nowhere. Like, the priests in this movie are such, like, especially since, like, it's 1981 when this movie comes out. We have seen charismatic, interesting, compelling priest protagonists in, like,
well, the
movies,
Exorcist, but
particularly in horror, particularly in the fucking Exorcist. So, like, if we're supposed to be rooting for the side of priests, you would assume they would give us a priest to root for, and they don't. So when it gets Jesus-y, like, there's no kind of ramp up. There's no, like, it really just goes from zero to Jesus.
Yeah.
Kind of all at once.
I mean, that's the true horror, right? Like, that's the truly scary, you know.
Yeah.
The cruelest trick in the box, I guess, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like, when you think somebody's flirting with you and she's actually just, like, trying to get you to go to church with her.
Oh, my God.
Whatever happened to you?
Oh, my God.
Damn.
It actually kind of has.
I mean, actually, it wasn't church. It was a Chabad girl when I was in high school. Mm. But, like, similar vibes. Like, being overly friendly, like, getting along. Like, oh, okay, cool. Like, oh, you want to come over? That's great. Oh, no, you want to make sure I have Shabbat candles. All right.
Oh, wow.
Okay, thanks. I do.
Wow. Man.
Yeah, it's that, like, the switcheroo, the religious switcheroo.
I want to interview everyone who made this movie, because I just want to know what they were going for in, like, 10 different parts of this, including that ending.
I'm seeing, like, what the fuck? Okay, this writer wrote something called The Lost Boys. I was like, not The Lost Boys, but it's a different thing called The Lost Boys. I want to see, so this writer, what else did they... guy did some more Bible stuff.
Oh, wow.
I mean, weird, that makes weird. Sense. That checks
yeah,
out.
It does.
Right?
It does.
Wow. Weird.
It's a lot. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot going on here. Obviously, everyone comes to a religious horror movie with different religious feelings and experiences and stuff that it evokes for them, right? Which I find actually very interesting. It's part of why I think maybe our conversation here has been as entertaining for me as the movie, because it is just a thing that evokes very, very strong feelings in different ways for different people.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, though, about this movie that I wonder what draft of the script this was. That's something I kind of keep coming at as I think about it. Like, was this, like, part of a rewrite or part of it? Because I just get that vibe from it, just with some of the uneven characterization and some of the plotting and some of the stuff. Like, I could 100% imagine this with, like, cooler priests and it being a lot more kind of ambivalent about who you're supposed to be kind of rooting for.
Yeah, what if the priests were also cool and sexy?
They were also sexy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were just like, let me show you the meaning of Christ's love, Damien. And they kiss.
Yeah.
And they do kiss.
Welcome to my Omen 3 fanfiction. Welcome to my Omen 3 AU what if scenario. What if the priests were hot? And Damien's like, no, I won't be seduced by your love. And they're just like, it's okay, Damien. Christ loves you. And, like, it's like a gay seduction movie, except it's the priests, the Christians are trying to seduce Damien. This is a good premise. Let me write the Omen 4, which is just a sort of the Omen 3 again, but just different.
Yeah.
Can we get Sam Neill again?
Can we get Sam Neill again?
Question. Yeah.
Can we de-age him with the Marvel technology?
No. Not that technology. I hate that technology. It's bad. I finished watching The Mandalorian over the weekend. I hate that technology.
Yeah, no, it's bad. Don't do it.
Also, yeah, it's not good. Yeah, the fucking
Luke
Sims
is in
3.
That?
Yeah, yeah, they have Mandalorian. Oh, do you not hear about those?
I have a Sims in the slightest. So
they have a Sims 3 of Luke Skywalker at the very, very end of The Mandalorian. He just shows up and is like, "That's the end."
Wait, the Sims 3?
Well, it's like, it's so like he just looks
like a
de-aged.
Oh, I got you. He's like a de-aged hologram.
He's
like
a smoother Luke, you know?
Yeah.
Like a Luke and like a smoother Luke.
Ooh, is he lukewarm? Is that how you're feeling about it?
No, it's like it's like a cold, slimy, smooth Luke.
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
I think
I think we're done.
I think we're basically done.
I think
this is a weird movie, and it didn't entirely land for me, but I did enjoy it. And Sam Neill is just a national treasure of New Zealand.
Do you know
what Sam Neill's full name is without looking it up?
No.
Sam Neill Tyson.
No, Sam is not not his legal name.
Oh my God.
I'm looking at it right now. You're never going to guess it.
Nigel John Dermot Sam,
like a wrestler,
Neil.
I love him.
Like
I love
Nigel
him.
John Dermot, the animal, Neil.
I love him even more.
And the picture of him on Wikipedia is him with a glass of wine, and he has just the warmest smile on his face. And,
Wait.
You love to see it.
Yeah.
Wait.
You love to see it.
He married Lisa Hera. They were married for almost a decade.
Wow. Good job.
And now his partner is Laura Tingle.
Oh, Tingle and John Dermot. That's lovely. Well, incredible.
Well, thank you. I did not recommend this because I think it's a great... I think it's a masterpiece, but I do think it's an interesting mess. And yeah. I love talking to both of you about interesting messes, and I had a lot of fun here. And I hope you, audience, also had fun. But yeah, I think we should wrap up and say that that is all for this week. And then we really do hope that you enjoyed your cinematic journey with us. Be sure to rate and review our podcast. Tell friends. Listen to all of our stuff at fanbite.com/podcasts. We also have like another URL for podcasts, right?
It's podcastnet.work.
Follow us on Twitter at Fanbite Media, Instagram at Fanbite, TikTok on Fanbite, and of course on fanbite.com. You can watch all of our streams, which are very, very, very good, on twitch.tv/fanbite. This is coming out Thursday, so tomorrow we will have another Merit Souls with everyone's favorite person, Garfield, from church.
I thought you were going to say Merit. And I was like, yeah.
And yeah. Merit. I mean, Merit,
no, listen, Garfield's the star. Yeah, I'm like Jim Davis now. We're like, everyone loves Garfield, but like no one remembers about me, you know?
Oh,
I always remember Jim Davis. I always remember Merit. Sorry.
Good.
Thank you so much to Paul Tamayo for producing and offering commentary that we read and sometimes read to you, audience, but it's always good.
Yeah.
Where can folks find you all?
Merit, you should go first.
I'm at Merit K on Twitter. Easy.
I am Danielle R.I. on Twitter.
And I am Hunt Tears on Twitter. Oh, you should also join our very good Discord, which is fanbite.com. Cool. And yeah, so until next time, you love to salmon.